Hello and welcome to this special episode, mini episode of Shockwaves 7.5, the July 4th celebration, whatever you want to call it, all right? We've heard you, you cannot live without us edition or whatever the hell. I'm one of your hosts, Rob Galuzzo. I'm sitting here with the head of development at Blumhouse, Mr. Ryan Turek.
Hello.
Hello.
Thanks for having me on.
Of course. And with us as well is Rebecca McKendry.
What up?
Hello.
Up? Hey, guys.
So here's the deal. Elric is driving. No, he's not dead.
He's driving.
2016 has been a hell of a year.
It's been a hell of a year so far.
Take an Elric cane.
It's taken Elric. But no, Elric is actually still, to this day, traveling cross-country with his family. He had planned this trip a while ago. I don't know why it feels way longer than we thought
it's
it was going
like,
to be.
I mean, it's I think like in month. Total, it's like 3 weeks that they're gone. It's like, it's a hell of a journey.
It's felt like an eternity. But anyways, this is kind of improv. We're just like, you know what? It's going to be another week or two before we can record a proper Shockwaves. So I reached out to Becca and Ryan. I was like, you want to just record something quick and easy and just kind of catch up on what we've seen? So here we are.
Sounds like a plan. Happy 4th of July, everybody.
Happy 4th, everybody.
Happy
Canada Day.
our folks up north.
Right. Whatever you celebrate, happy that. All right. So in honor of the holiday, I have two things I want to talk about. Number one, The Purge election year just came out this weekend.
Oh yeah,
a little movie that's that Blumhouse is responsible
for. That's right.
Now I have never seen any of the Purge movies until this week.
That blows my mind.
Yeah, that. But you know, when I we did a couple of articles on the Purge this week, and when I was handing out writer assignments, I gave one to Elise, and she said the same thing. She's like, "Oh, I'll do it, but I've never watched any of the movies. Hold tight while I go watch them all." And I was like, "What is up with you people?"
You know what? I don't know what it is. I think I missed the first one because when it came out, you know, like I'm not that big a fan of the home invasion thing. So I it's like one of those weird fears I have. So I was like, I don't want to, you know, there had been a few at that point, like You're Next and stuff like that. But I was like, I don't think I'm gonna like that movie. That's all I kept thinking, is I don't think I'm gonna like it. I like the concept and the idea,
right?
But then somebody told me, yeah, but it's not that, it's a home invasion movie.
Yeah, yeah.
The second one sounds like the concept that I wanted the first one to be.
It is,
right?
And yeah, I still missed it because I was like, do I need to see the first one to see the second?
Not really.
Obviously the third one came out this week, and I was like, you know what, I actually have a digital copy of the second that I've never watched, so I'm just gonna go into that. And I loved it. I love the second one.
Yeah.
It's really crazy. And
what was the aspect that you liked about it? What was it, like Frank Grillo's story, or just the fact that they widened the scope of it?
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, it's really hard to, you know, I'm a sensitive horror viewer. Yeah. So initially, it's really hard to accept the conceit of the world because you're like, wait, for 12 hours, you could like murder people? Like, yeah, that's not right. Although politically, we're probably going in that direction. Yeah. Which is really scary, but I guess you know what it is. I like it. It doesn't feel like a horror movie to me. It feels like a kind of post-apocalyptic action movie.
Sure,
you know, that's, yeah. Frank Grillo is totally. Everyone's like, oh, he should be the Punisher or whatever. And now that I've seen Anarchy, I was like, yeah, he's totally like the Punisher in that world.
Yeah,
he's just got.
He doesn't need to be the Punisher now because he's Frank Grillo.
Yeah, exactly. He's Frank Grillo.
Yeah, it's not it's deviated from the horror roots that it began with, the home invasion aspect and the masked killers in the first one, and the, you know, that kind of skewed more horror. But still, at the end of the day, the third act turned into a full blown like siege movie. And the way I kind of relate the films, just in my own little nerd brain, is like, you know, Demonico is a big Carpenter fan, and you know, I look at The Purge as Assault on Precinct 13.
Oh, totally. Yeah, yeah.
And also, you know, Demonico is also a big Walter Hill fan. So I look at, you know, the first one is Assault. The second one's The Warriors.
Yeah.
You know, because it's about this kind of like, we need to get from one side of the city to the other. You know,
sure,
there's an objective, and there's all these kind of factions of killers after them and stuff. And then the third one's Full Escape from New York.
Yeah.
Where you actually have a politician.
Wow.
You've got to bring the politician to safety. And there's like a... there's a dude in the movie who's part of the Founding Fathers, and he's got like very gaunt skin and you know, bags under his eyes and crazy hair. He's that crazy guy from Escape from New York. That's the influences I saw.
Right.
I haven't been able to talk to James about it and kind of geek out with him, but I saw that and I was like, oh, that's that guy. Like, that's supposed to be the dude, you know, in a way, you know.
That's super cool.
The very first time I met Jason, it was like right after I got the job for the website. I got an email and it was like, Jason wants to have lunch with you. Come on in. You're going to meet with him and Charles. And within 5 minutes of being in there, Jason said, and I will never forget this, I can always tell what type of people or viewers people are by which Purge film they prefer. Are you one or two? And I was like, I'm a two. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's fun. Ryan, do you have any insight in terms of why they went the direction they went with two? Like, because I mean, was that something James wanted to do with the original movie, but he was working with a low budget? Like, you know what?
Well,
if I keep it contained in a house, I could pull this off.
Yeah. Well, from my understanding, I mean, and just I don't have too much creative insight because those were made before me, but. You know, I think the thinking was take the first film and the idea and kind of go Rod Serling-esque with it, you know, where you have kind of this microcosm view of a larger world and do it on the budget you can do it on and tell the story that you can. So tell something that's contained and intimate, but hint at what else is going on beyond this, you know, subdivision, you know. Mm-hmm. And then with obviously the first film did really well. So the second one allows DeMonico to kind of go a little freer and get a little bit more money to play with. Hmm. But, you know, it's still, there's still the Blumhouse budget, you know, that you have to kind of play within. And so that allowed him to kind of take it to the streets. And I think that's what everybody wanted to ultimately see anyway.
Yeah.
And then the third one, you know, it's like you keep these movies keep becoming more successful and you get a little bit more to play with and you get to play with that ambition a lot more. I think the third one delivers on, you know, what I was kind of hoping for. We're not really hoping for, but after I saw The Purge for the first time, going, oh, I want to see, like, I want to kind of step back and see the entire tapestry now. Like, yeah. I want to see the chaos. And I think that this film does that. It's, there's like that kind of cool guillotine gag when they're like walking down the street and they see like a bunch of idiots with a guillotine in the alleyway. And it's like, oh yeah, that's the kind of crazy shit that I want to see now.
It's like the Burning Man of torture.
Yeah. And then it was like the kind of Pit in the Pendulum gag. Yeah, and I was like, oh my God, this is a lot of fun.
I like I have to go back and watch one, but I like three, but I didn't like three as much as two, although a lot of people seem to like the third the best. Only because it's pretty out of control, even humor wise. Like, I like that there's a little bit of levity in it, but it would have probably played better with a bigger audience. Like, I saw it with a bunch of fellow coworkers and stuff, but it was it's pretty fun. It's just like Grillo's a strong front man, you know, and it's kind of like, oh, I'm glad his character's back. Yeah.
Well, I love what I love about it.
But I love the foreigners that come to America.
It's a great idea.
Like, oh, we want to come to Paris.
Yeah. It's messed up. But what I also love, too, is that DeMonico's not afraid to kind of play into like kind of old action movie tropes that people don't explore anymore, or not even explore, but just kind of like rely on. Because I remember growing up, you know, watching 80s action movies. You knew what the structure was. You know, you had your guy, your good guy. Then you had whatever, you know, problem that he was taking on. And then at the end, you knew in the last 30 minutes, he was going to take on either the main bad dude or his henchman, who is equally as evil, if not more than.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it would lead to like a 10 to 20 minute fight.
Yeah.
And I love that the purge election year literally ends with, you know, it has Grillo taking on a guy for like a good 5 minutes. You know, I was like, yes, this is excellent. I love that. I think it's a fun movie. I think it turned out really, really great.
It's done well this weekend.
Yeah, people seem to be digging it. So that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Dory can't beat Dory, man.
No, but I loved it was a Blumhouse employee that pointed out on Facebook that the entire budget of The Purge was probably the Kraft food budget on BFG.
BFG beat that. Tarzan, yeah.
We paid for The Purge with their Lobster Wednesdays or something.
It's very true. Yeah.
That's true. The only other thing I did that's kind of holiday themed, Jaws 3D came out in 3D. Yeah.
Which I heard the resolution on it is a little wonky.
Oh, don't. I know your source and don't listen.
Okay. Don't listen to that guy.
No, the resolution for the regular 2D version is definitely be desired because there's a lot of grain and it's not really great, but it works in 3D. The 3D version's great. And I mean, I never thought I'd see, I missed that in theaters. I never got to see it that way. So right. I've only seen that cheeseball movie and it is a cheeseball movie.
Let me ask, does the shark strangely floating motionlessly drifting toward the glass still, work in
still,
3D?
It does, but it still looks pretty bad.
Okay.
But the arm coming at you, in 3D is pretty awesome.
Wow.
So I do like that. No, it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's weird how Universal did it because it's a pretty inexpensive release. Like all the sequels are like $10 each.
Yeah.
But in order to, like, Jaws 3D, you have to go to bonus features, and there's an option for Jaws in 3D.
Oh.
So, like, it's not even listed or, you know, like, promoted that there's a 3D version on it.
And I can wait. To... So I can can I use the goofy glasses?
No. It's the 3D TV, but it's, like, hidden in the bonus features, which is so weird.
Wow.
But so I watched that, and I paired it up with Bait 3D, because I figured, let's do,
Bait's great.
It's a lot of fun. It's really... You know what it was? I was watching with a friend of mine, my buddy Josh, and we were just like, I love when you're so ambitious with like five ideas and you're like, let's try to make them all work. Because that movie's like part romance that breaks up and then part heist. Like
Have you looked at the crowd? I mean, like there's like 20 writers on that movie. Of course, it's indicative of that. You know, it's like a kitchen sink movie.
Oh, but one of them was Russell Mulcahy.
Yeah.
So I was like, get out of here. Of course. So there's that.
He was going to direct. He was going to direct it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Blow my mind. But yeah, then there's a tsunami and then Shark show up. It's just in a supermarket. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Oh, that movie.
It's a good year for shark exploitation.
Yeah, yeah. So those are really fun. I like those shark movies, especially the 3D ones. So I don't know. What have you guys been watching?
Did you see The Shallows?
I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't. I heard mixed reviews on it.
No, go see The Shallows. You have to see it on a big screen.
Because you know what a huge like shark aquatic horror fan I am.
Yeah. Becca, I mean, can't even believe that you even like...
I was like sick this entire week. I have not left the house.
Listening to other people's opinions about shark movies.
I will say it's somebody that I usually trust on their shark movie opinion.
No, they're wrong.
They are wrong.
It's good. It's a good movie. It's really solid. It's beautifully shot. Blake Lively carries it really well. Shark looks good.
Excellent.
Shark looks good. It looks good. I really liked it. And it's a crud pleaser. You know, you see it with the crowd, and you know, I was sitting there just going, nope. When there was like a lot of shark stuff happening, and everybody seemed to be on the edge of their seat. It was a lot of fun, and the finale is just like, oh yes, this is fantastic. But it's really well done. I mean, like, you know, the filmmaker who also did House of Wax and, you know, Orphan.
Both of which I love.
Yeah, those are both great movies.
And we have a really good interview with him on our site right now about his next film and the sequel to Orphan.
Hopefully. From Michael Gingold, formerly of Fangoria, did an interview for us.
Sidebar conversation. It's just great to see Gingold, like, getting spread around.
He's everywhere now.
It's like every day I see my Facebook feed. It's like, Mike Gingold has joined Rumorg Magazine.
Yeah.
Mike Gingold has joined Blumhouse.com. Yeah. Mike Gingold has joined this.
He's everywhere. You can't escape the gang.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing.
But The Shallows is really, really good. What did you see, Becca?
I finally got to see Green Room, which I had been dying to see the entire time it was running in theaters. And finally, the blue shows up at my door and I was like, oh, God, thank you. I loved it.
Yeah.
I swear that this will be in 20 years the film that teenagers are like, oh my God, you haven't seen Green Room. Like the secret little cult film that they trade around.
Oh, yeah.
I could see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Because like when I was in school, we definitely had these kind of like SLC punk style films.
That you shared like on VHS. Like Reservoir Dogs is my version of that. When I was in high school, I was like, guys, here's Reservoir Dogs.
Everybody has to see this. And I think that is where Green Room is going to be. I absolutely loved it. Just every minute of it. Amazing dialogue in it. There's this speech where he's talking about how it's the gun and it doesn't have bullets. It has cartridges because the barrel's so big. And I'm like, this is just great dialogue, guys.
Yeah,
it's just good. Because we've been doing all of this back project that I'm working on Giallo Films, which I've talked about, how we watched Torso and a couple others, I borrowed Rob's Fancy Schmancy Tenebrae.
Yeah.
You have that one too, right?
That.
Yeah,
the one that was like way overpriced. Like I was serious. I was considering buying it and then I was like, $60? No.
Worth it.
You paid $60?
No, I borrowed his.
Oh, because you got the other.
I got the steal from whatchamacallit.
That's right.
Yeah.
Directly from Synapse.
Yeah. Right. It was a bit too much for me. So I borrowed Rob's because, you know, you can check out from the Galuzzo library.
Friends with benefits.
So it's not my favorite Giallo film. I'm definitely more of a Torso person, even though that movie's kind of all over the place with like six different plots going on.
Yeah. Torso's got like the greatest finale, though. It's a great closing.
It works for me. And Tenebrae, it functions like most Argento films where it's kind of stream of conscious and there's just kind of some weirdness interjected in various points. But for some reason, great, but not my favorite. Another one that I watched that quite possibly may be my favorite, Stage Fright.
Oh, yeah.
Which is much, much later. It's definitely not in like the Trugiello cycle because it was much later in the 80s. But man, every single frame of that movie is just artwork.
I love it so much.
The feathers that fall for an insanely long time. Like, where the fuck are these feathers coming from at the end? But it is just so gorgeous.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's a great. I mean, that's just like one of my favorites of all time. I mean, it's such a
owl-headed killer.
The owl-headed killer, you know. And then like the drill I did when I was at Shock to Drop, I did like a video series that kind of pulled my favorite scenes in horror movies, and I try to dissect and explain why. And the bit where the guy gets drilled through the door is one of my favorite kills in a giallo. It's really awesome.
Yeah.
That movie's just fantastic, and it's just like got that operatic ballet thing at the beginning where it's like the guy dancing around. I want to be that guy for Halloween. Listen, Shockwaves listeners, if you could make me an owl head, you will wear it. Hit me up. I will wear it for Halloween.
He will wear it.
Wow.
Yeah, I just, there's just so many, all of the little set pieces. And I had a conversation with Rodman Flender this past week on how to construct set pieces and like murder set pieces. And then I watched this right afterwards, and the movie is really just built out of murder set pieces. I mean, there's okay, we're doing some theater. Okay, so there's a killer with an owl mask. And then the rest of the movie is literally just set pieces strung together, but they are all so powerful that even after one concludes, it doesn't like, there's no pause before the next one starts. It's just so well constructed. And then the last one I watch is kind of a weird one, and I need you guys to watch it because I need to discuss it with somebody. So I stumbled onto this one when I was on Amazon Prime, and it came up on my feed as like, you might like, and it's called How to Kill Your Friends. And at first I was kind of hesitant because it's put out by the same British company that also did The Forest, which was a little mixed. It had some good moments for me, but it was a little
mixed.
You
liked it.
I had some good moments. It was a little mixed.
All right.
But
when did it come out?
It came out like this year. It's recent. And it's streaming on Amazon Prime right now. So I highly recommend checking it out. It's based off a book. And it's about, it's set in the 90s. And it is about the British pop music boom, which you don't really think is a thing until you watch the movie. And then you realize that like in the late 90s, like they had the Spice Girls and Oasis and all of these major bands were like getting worldwide acclaim out of Britain. And so he is a record executive at one of the major record labels. And it's pretty much Wolf of Wall Street if midway through Leo started killing all of his competitors. And so it's got that same kind of cocaine fueled, very fast moving, very, you know, high, intense. We've got so much money. We don't know what to do with it. We're insane. We're just fueled on our egos and we're now killing people.
Yeah.
Concept to it. I thought it was great. I thought the filmmaking was good. I thought the dialogue was good. And then I went online and all these people were like, this movie was stupid. I don't even know what was going on. I lost attention midway through and I was like, wait, I liked this. So I need somebody else to watch it so I can talk about
it. Check it out. It's Nicholas Holt from the X-Men movies. Isn't it? And James Corden.
Yeah, it's a fascinating cast. It's there's definitely some parts that work better than others, but it kept me going the whole way through. And it was one of those movies where at the end I was like, man, that was just intense and just full of like it had so much emotion going the whole way through that it kept me really fascinated. And I was into it. And it's a comedy too. And it is told in that kind of American Psycho. It does have a lot of American Psycho tones to it, except it's in the 90s, where it's him narrating the story. And that leads to some of the humor where he's talking about like what he's thinking during meetings or while he's talking with somebody at a bar and you hear his like inner monologue going on. So I need somebody else to watch it. I will say it's not 100% horror because it is just like this guy starts killing people never gets like he never becomes a slasher. He has motivation. He's literally just doing this to people to get further along in the company. So it's not like a slasher where he's just picking off random people. But yeah, there was something really charming about it to me. So somebody else needs to watch it.
I'll check it out.
I'll add it to my queue.
Am I up?
Yeah, what do you got over
there? All right, so
got a couple of
I've got some things.
And a Blu-ray.
You should probably take note that over the weekend, depending on when you listen to this, Robin Hardy of The Wicker Man passed away this weekend.
Yeah.
He was 86. You know, I mean, like when you're up at 86, you know, 90, that's you had a good run.
Good life, yeah.
He knocked out another Wicker Man movie or Wicker sequel.
You mean the Wicker musical?
The Wicker Tree.
No,
the Wicker
Tree.
Oh, yeah.
It's the Singing Cowboy movie.
Yeah, the Singing Cowboy movie. Oh, yeah. Wow. Well, hey, you know what? Fly your Fly your free flag.
Yeah, whatever you want to do.
Whatever you want to do, man, do it.
And I will say that there were parts of that that I was like, okay, this actually kind of... No, Ryan's shaking his head.
No, no.
There were parts that I was like, there's something like I could see the origin there. Like it had that same kind of pastoral British kind of gothic-y feel. Yeah. And then it got obliterated into singing cowboys.
Yeah,
it's
so
bizarre.
Well, I mean, that'll kind of tie into what I wanted to talk about with The Wicker Man. Because I watched it last night at like 1 o'clock in the morning. And I was strangely awake. But you know, I remember the first time I saw The Wicker Man, I didn't see Wicker Man until I actually moved out here. And then it came out, Anchor Bay put it out in this kind of like wooden box set. And
I did pay for that one.
Yeah. Yeah. I bought that. And I remember, you know, being told it was one of the scariest movies of all time. It was absolutely terrifying. And rewatching it last night and then thinking back to my first time watching it, I just remember I was laughing my ass off because I didn't know what to make of it. Like here I was thinking, okay, Robert, here's this like Brit who did something really terrifying. You know, it's going to be packed full of dread. And what I got was like a small town, like island village thing musical, you know? And I was like, what is this movie?
But they have fruit orgies and things like that.
But it's so weird because it's like literally... It's music bit after music bit, mm-hmm. you know, with it's Edward Woodward, like just kind of walking from bit to bit, observing everything. But what's interesting about it is it all ties into the larger picture, which is like kind of like faith versus, you know, this other thing, you know, paganism and all this other stuff. And all the music is really important. It all has something to say, which ties into this island and what their belief system is. And so it's kind of gone down smoother, but to say that it's the most terrifying movie...
I never considered it scary.
Yeah, I don't think it's... I think the finale is scary, and the finale is really unnerving as a film because here's this guy who is, you know, being sacrificed. And, you know, it's just... I don't understand it. Mm-hmm. I don't get it. But maybe it's just a generational thing. Maybe when it came out and people were watching it, I'm sure they had their minds blown by what was going on. And then when it came to the finale, they were probably like, oh my God, that was terrifying. I took that with them. But going in, you know, with having it built up so much, I think it's one of my favorite movies now. It took a little time for me to get into it, but it's a great film. And also the Blu-ray I watched had some footage that I don't remember. And
yeah, what version do you have? Because
this is quote unquote the final cut.
The final cut.
And I have never
so
seen
so many versions of this movie. I don't even know which one to watch.
I know, that's the thing. I you know, it's like it was interesting when Anchor Bay put out that Dawn of the Dead box set that had clear delineations. This is cut one. This is cut two. This is the international cut. This is like, and they put it all together. And I wish they would do that for these types of movies because when they come out, you don't know what the fuck you're watching sometimes. It's just like you forget which version that you actually like. And that sounds like a first world problem, but you know, watching the final cut last night, it was like, oh, there's an extra bit with Christopher Lee. Like this sheds a little bit more light on Lord Summer's Isle and you know what's going on. Hmm. Anyways, it was interesting. So, I watched The Wicker Man and then,
Final cut, you recommend that one?
Final cut wasn't bad. I mean, it just depends if you're like more accustomed to, you know, the theatrical cut. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're more accustomed to the theatrical cut, I don't think the final cut will insult you in any way or, you know, it'll just throw you off a little bit because mm-hmm. you'll go, wait a minute, I don't remember that scene being there. And then the other film I watched recently was Slaughter High.
Oh, yeah.
And Slaughter High is something I had not seen probably in its entirety.
Oh, really?
I don't think I've ever even seen Slaughter High because slashers were never really like my passion as much as a lot of other types of horror. So I've seen a lot.
How this one escaped me, I have no idea because I love it so much. I love this movie so much. I bought it when I was in Toronto recently. I thought that I was getting a gem of a discount because I was like, whoa, this movie's out of print, man. And then I bought it. And then I was like, oh, I could have just got it on Amazon for like 10 bucks cheaper. but, you know, it's such a archetypal slasher movie where it's a bunch of asshole kids set up the class nerd for failure and embarrassment. Class nerd gets into a little bit of a trouble. In this case, he's doing a lab experiment and he catches on fire and he's whisked off to the hospital. And then many years later, all these asshole kids come together for a reunion and the nerd comes back for revenge and kills them all.
Every setup.
Yeah. And what I didn't realize is that Slaughter High is from the same producers as Don't Open Till Christmas. And so you've got some of the same actors, and you've also got this really gnarly tone to it, which is super mean-spirited. Unlike some of the other stuff that you got from the other slasher movies that were coming out of the U.S., I believe this was like a U.K. production, so... Mm-hmm. You have Carol Monroe in it. I think you have an actress. I think her name is Kelly Baker. She was in Don't Open Till Christmas, and she was like one of the strippers. And it's surprisingly really, really mean spirited. Some of the kills are fantastic. The killer is great. And then
Jester.
And the Jester, exactly. And what you also, I kind of digging into the research on it, I didn't realize either that the guy who plays the class nerd killed himself.
Oh yeah.
So it was
that's
like
a big part of like the I don't history, want to say the lore, but like one of the weird things about watching it is knowing that.
Yeah. Simon Scudamore.
Yeah. And I think it might've been before it even came out.
Poor dude. Yeah. No, he died. Time. Yeah. Cause the movie came out in 86 and he killed himself. Well, I don't know why this was, apparently he killed himself in 84 and the movie didn't come out until 86, so I don't know what the history is, and I'm sure you guys can fill in the blanks for me once this goes up. But anyways, Slaughter High is now one of my favorite slasher movies. I think it's absolutely ridiculous.
Carolyn Monroe in high school playing Carolyn Monroe, and then 30 years later.
30 years, yeah.
This hipster on the front cover.
So Carolyn Monroe was 36 when she was in Italy. She played a teenager.
She played both her versions.
Yeah. So Lionsgate put out this DVD, and it was really funny because I forgot there was a time they put up this thing called The Lost Collection, which is the best movies you totally forgot about.
Yep.
And on the front of the DVD box, it's got this fucking hipster dude with tight jeans, glasses, sounds like me. And he's got a t-shirt that says, "We'll self-defend."
Well, because then, that was the only horror one of that collection.
Yeah, but they all had this nerd on it.
Yeah, because they were all like kind of comedy, like Morgan, it's supposed to be like John Cry and Morgan Stewart's Coming Home was one of the releases. Repossessed was another one.
I was completely lost.
Yeah, part of that theme because even the Morgan Stewart's Coming Home one actually says on the back the original hipster John Cryer.
Yeah, on this one, this nerd is going all about my favorite horror flick. Yeah. Or no, all about my favorite slasher flick.
Oh yeah, your opposite side chose them all.
Yeah. This is all of them on it. So
that was their cool like comic icon that they were using to carry the whole release slate.
Pretty much
because they're all kind of in that comedy so spin except for Slaughter High.
So goofy. So anyways, I don't think this is on Blu-ray, obviously. And if you can get it on DVD, I recommend you get it. It's not the best. I think it looks like a Laserdisc transfer, actually.
Yeah.
Because it has some of the Laserdisc scam lines that come up. I remember if you lived in a household of Laserdisc buyers,
I did as well.
You would be sending back Laserdisc because there would always be this kind of like weird scam line things that pop up. But I noticed that came up on the transfers for this, so... but Slaughter High, guys, I mean, like, where has this baby been?
I don't know. Missing out.
This is the thing. this is what's great about horror movies is that, you know, I consider myself a really big slasher movie fan. I love when you talk about, you know, the kind of subgenre slasher movies are my favorite. And I'm still discovering some.
You know,
it's great.
No, there's always a gem. Yeah. I think that's why people, you know, this is why we do this sort of thing. We keep talking like, I just got to see that one more.
Right.
It's like, what's that movie? It's so good.
I just got Hellhole from Scream Factory, which I am totally excited. I still haven't watched it because I was like, I had such a bad cold last week and I was like, I'm just not up to watching Hellhole.
I have a feeling we're going to be disappointed, but I'm so excited.
I know. So am I. And Jeff keeps writing on, he wrote underneath my post. He's like, I can't wait to see what you think of this.
Is it a partial women in prison movie? It looks like a torture film.
Bloodsucking Freaks realm.
Oh, okay.
It looks really extreme because on the front cover it says something like naked and bound in a prison, and I'm like, okay, Jesus. This sounds pretty intense, but I'm kind of interested. And I want to see The Boy Who Cried Werewolf as well.
I watched that one already. It's pretty cool. Yeah, nice. I mean, it's not great, but it's not a TV movie, but it feels kind of like it. It's really simple. I mean, you know, they kind of stretch this concept to a theatrical, but I'm like really into, I love werewolf movies, mm-hmm. and especially if they like look practical. I should mention briefly, and I'll talk about it more when Elric gets back to the show, but I also did a werewolf-themed double feature last night of the movie Howl.
Oh, yeah.
And Bad Moon.
Bad Moon because, is awesome.
Yeah, they're about to put out, Scream Factory is about to put out Eric Red's Bad Moon. Mm-hmm. What's great about Bad Moon, I didn't know this until I popped the disc in, is they give you the option for director's cut.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, what's this? And I looked, and it looks like it's the same... It's still a swift 79 minutes. Yeah. So I was like, oh, it's, I wonder what's in there. So we watched it, and when I got to the end, my memory was this is the worst CGI transformation ever put to film. Mm. But in the director's cut, it's not there.
Oh.
It's actually like a quick two shots, and then effectively he's the wolf.
Dude, that's, so that's, I'm like, fucking, wow, great.
Wait a minute, did they cut that out? So then I went to the theatrical, and yes.
That's
his
fantastic.
Director's cut, nice, actually cuts out and truncates that, the terrible transformation by a lot and makes it more effective.
Oh, and that's, the only, that's fantastic. Other, that, like, that literally elevates like the movie from like a solid like 7.5 to like an 8.
Yes, because it's long and awful, that scene. Yeah. And it's funny because they actually talk about it on the... Steve Johnson was the guy who did the effects, and he's on the bonus features with Eric Red.
Oh, boy.
And I mean, all of them across the board are like, well, look, we thought we knew what we were doing, and we were trusting the digital people and trying to work, and then it just cuts to Eric Red. He's it's one of the worst things that's ever.
Yeah, no, it's terrible.
Like, it's awful. It's so bad. Yeah. And so I thought that was fun. The director's cut just kind of cuts it out and makes it more effective.
That's awesome.
And I think there's a little additional in the opening, like Michael Perret's having some pretty gnarly sexual activity with his girlfriend or in a whirlwind. I think that's a lot longer.
Oh,
it
yeah.
definitely seems a little bit more provocative than I remember. So those are the differences that I could tell.
That's awesome.
But
great. I can't wait. Yeah. That's cool. One of my favorites.
I always liked Bad Moon. I'm glad to see that it they cut that nastiness.
Now this is for the purists. You can watch the transformation on there. It's on the theatrical cut.
Oh, Jesus. I can't see anybody reaching for that version, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, do you want to watch the cut with a really shitty CGI transformation? I mean, the other one's pretty bad and not like, disrespecting the man, Wes Craven, but Cursed has a pretty abominable.
Does it? Watching CGI transformation this made me want to be like, you know what?
I'd like
to go back and watch Cursed again.
it literally looks like a monkey. It looks like a shaved monkey walking down a hallway, and then until it starts sprouting hair and all that stuff.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
But you get a Judy Greer werewolf, I mean, like, Judy Greer is a fantastic actress, and it's like, she's been a werewolf, she's been a monkey. Yeah. I mean, like a monkey in Planet of the Apes, it's like,
it's been all over the place.
All over the place.
Well done.
Yeah.
My last recommendation is, and I wrote about it on the site, I watched Bernard Rose's Frankenstein. I loved it. Ryan's making a face at me.
Cool.
But I loved it.
That's cool.
Well, because I'm so, look, when it comes to Dracula or any of the classic monsters, they've been done so much, but yet I still feel compelled as a horror viewer to want to watch them. Yeah. And I never see anything new. It always like bothers me when I see like a take that's exactly the same. I was just, honestly, I knew nothing about it. I didn't see any footage. I didn't see a trailer.
Right.
We just started it, and I didn't know that it was from the perspective of the monster, mm-hmm. like the whole way through, and like, it's like the saddest version.
It makes
of
it very sad. Yeah.
Because he, they make him. He's an infant. He's like a 1-year-old practically. He doesn't understand.
Oh,
He kind of adjusts. It's the guy from The Loved Ones too. And Beat.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of funny. And then, he develops these cancerous sores because he's becoming the monster.
Failing. Yeah,
he's failing and they want to put him down and he doesn't understand it. And it's just so horrific. And I really like that. And then there's a few sequences. It's like when he escapes, and this is in the beginning, obviously, the Frankenstein legend, the monster gets out. It reminded me of the opening of like 28 days later, not later, the 28 weeks later, where he's like running across the field in this one take and everybody's like coming out to try to get him. I was like, that's pretty cool.
This one sounds really sad. I mean, they're all pretty sad, but
I tried to watch it with Ciara and she was like, this is a real bummer. And I was like, it is. I mean, like, it's there's a moment when they like tie him to a tractor. And I was like, this is really sad. Unfortunately, I wish I cared more about everybody.
Well, I liked it. It's not perfect. The one misstep in it, I think, is they have him narrate a little bit, and it's actual, bits from the book. Yeah. And it's like, well, here he is as an infant that can't talk, yet his dialogue is this of a sophisticated, you know, English. It just doesn't.
It's an interesting experiment. It doesn't gel entirely. But don't forget, I mean, like Carrie Ann Moss is in it.
Yeah.
And Danny Houston. They're both really good.
Todd is the blind man. I knew that was. Oh, yeah, I knew he was in it, and I was like, he's totally going to be the blind man that befriends Frankenstein. That's, right. That's going to be awesome. So there's good stuff in it. I just recommend it if you want to see something different with Frankenstein. So anyway, so we're going to go celebrate our holiday as you will do as well with your loved ones, I guess.
Yeah.
We will return sometime mid-month, I think, July 13th.
Yep.
Elric will be back. We've got a lot of good guests lined up, so trust me, it'll be worth the wait. And thank you, Ryan and Becca, for making this happen. Yeah.
Guys, I'm going to see John Carpenter again next week.
Hell yeah!
Damn you! He might be changing it up for the East Coast.
Oh,
because they just released a trailer for his East Coast leg of his tour.
Oh no way, really?
Oh, what?
Yeah. And I think he was implying that he was going to mix it up
a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh,
maybe he'll get a different show.
Maybe he'll throw in that John Carpenter's Vampires power chords.
You never know.
Maybe he'll
throw
in Ghosts of Mars.
You should get Ghosts
of Mars.
Bring
out the dude from Anthrax and play a little.
That'd be amazing.
I'd lose my mind.
All right, you guys. Thanks so much
for
joining us.
Happy 4th, guys.
Bye. See you soon.